through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
This hour of Jake and Stacy is brought to you by the Pro Club. Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross here with you. We've been talking about why the change at offensive coordinator was made for the Seahawks, how important the hire will be. But now, Jake, it's time to go over the OCs on your wish list. Now, you've broken this down into two categories: experienced play callers and current OCs you think the Seahawks should go after, and then some up-and-coming innovators who are currently not OCs but you want them to look at. Let's start with the first one: current OCs you think they should go after.
Yeah, this has everything to do with how aggressive do you want to be in terms of trying to get the best and find the best. And some of these names actually are really intriguing to me, because you would initially say there's no way that you would be able to get these guys, but they're also, some of these are not the play caller. They're OC by name, but not the play caller. So there would be an incentive for these guys to get an opportunity to show what they could do as the main play caller for an entire season, right? Number one to me is Nathaniel Hackett. I believe Nathaniel Hackett to me would be an unbelievable hire with what they've been able to do in Green Bay, what they've been able to put together between their run game and their passing game. Nathaniel Hackett would be a guy that if you could lure him away with the idea that, hey, you could be the play caller, it's not Matt LaFleur, it's your shot, I think that there's a chance there. Alex Van Pelt from Cleveland is another guy. These are all attacks that are run-oriented, run-centric, that have really good explosive passing offenses that are creative. Alex Van Pelt really, to me, is a guy that I've really enjoyed watching this season, along with Kevin Stefanski. The way that they've been able to get Baker Mayfield in a rhythm, the way that they've still been able to be explosive with Austin Hooper and Jarvis Landry and the rest of the group. But also so impressive to see what he did when he had a chance to call plays against the Steelers last week when Kevin Stefanski was not able to be there due to COVID. I think that would be a tremendous opportunity. This next one would be more of an outlier, because he is the play caller, is Arthur Smith with the Tennessee Titans. He's been getting head coaching offers, and I don't know if Arthur Smith would be on the table, but he would be one that I'd be very intrigued with in terms of going after. You talk about a run-centric offense. He knows how to run that. He had Derrick Henry. They were very run-focused, but they were also able to put and sustain 30 points per game throughout the entire season. So they were explosive in that as well. Shane Steichen is a guy that has been on this coaching staff's or on the Seahawks' short list, I believe, for offensive coordinators. He was the first name that was thrown out there by Mike Garafolo after Brian Schottenheimer got fired, and he did a great job in terms of tutoring Justin Herbert. Originally, Anthony Lynn hired him to really control the running game and to be able to do that, but ironically enough, they weren't very good in the running game last year. Their starting running back got hurt, but they did have a dynamic offensive attack, and Justin Herbert had an amazing year. And then two other names that I think is an experienced play caller, Stacey: Nick Sirianni from the Indianapolis Colts. They have a run oriented attack. With Frank Reich, and he is not the play caller. So that is somebody. Those are names that I look at that are run oriented guys that have explosive and dynamic offensive attacks that I think could help this offense. But those are some experienced play callers and current OCs that you could go after if you really wanted to.
If you're keeping score at home, I'm going to have you go on to the list of non-OCs in a second. If you're keeping score at home, here's the names that Jake recommends. Six of them first in the first group: Nathaniel Hackett, Alex Van Pelt, Arthur Smith, Shane Steichen, Nick Sirianni, and Doug Peterson.
Yeah, Doug Peterson is one that is a complete outside shot. It's not going to happen.
That's okay.
Throwing it in there. I would love to see Doug Peterson here, but there's just no way. I don't think Pete Carroll, and the hard part with all these guys is I don't believe those guys are going to be here, because I don't think that they will not feel comfortable not having the run of show on the offensive side of the ball and be able to call the game that they see it the way that they want to manage it. And so that's why I have a hard time, especially with Doug Peterson. You're not going to be able to control or manage him that way.
That's what I immediately thought with Doug Peterson. Is what I like about all these guys is they're all coming in from the outside. There's no inside hire for this. That's not a slight on any of Pete Carroll's coaching staff, but you have a lot of, it's not homogenous thinking. You have a lot of guys that have been with the same coaching staff with the same coach for a really long time. It's great to sometimes bring in an outside perspective and get some change of thought in there and have someone challenge each other, have someone either challenge Pete, challenge people on the coaching staff and say, hey, have we thought about this?
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, would, for instance, Doug Peterson, who has been a head coach and just said that he was glad to be leaving because he didn't like being told what to do, would you want him to come in and be on an island with no one else that was from outside the organization, with a head coach that was telling him this is how we're doing things? I mean, that would feel like a step back. It's a great opportunity for a young guy to come in and work with Russell Wilson, DK Metcalf, a team as accomplished as Seattle, a head coach as accomplished as Pete Carroll. That's a great opportunity. Is it an enviable one for a head coach that says, I don't want to be on an island by myself as the lone outside person with someone telling me how to manage my
offense? Yeah, it's a great point. And if I was any one of these guys, I'd be saying, hey, I want to bring in at least a couple of guys that I feel comfortable with, that I know that have the same vision that I do, and that I know can help me game plan in a certain way that will be very helpful to me. And so I think that those are all things that are very intriguing when you have this conversation. But let's get to the up and comers, the innovators who are not currently OCs right now, because I think that this is more of the list that you're looking at. When I think about this, those are just kind of guys, if I had my wish list, I would go after some of those guys. But these are the guys that I think are more legitimately on the table for you. And are easier to get to come to Seattle. Number one, you're picking from the Shanahan tree. You're picking from the Shanahan McVay tree in terms of the way that they are run oriented and the way that they can be creative and explosive in their offensive attack. So the first two guys on my list, on my wish list, would be Mike LaFleur and would be Mike McDaniel, who are the passing game coordinator and the running game coordinators for the 49ers. Those two guys, I think, are incredibly innovative. They understand the evolution of what is happening to offenses right now and have created and found dynamic ways to be successful in the passing game, be successful in the running game. And so those two guys would, I think either one of those two guys would be great. The third one would be Shane Waldron, the passing game coordinator from the Los Angeles Rams. Kevin O'Connell is a name that has been floated out there, but I think Shane Waldron has been more entrenched in what Sean McVay has done with this Rams offense, so he would be a guy that I would be highly encouraged by if they brought him in. Number four, Pep Hamilton. Pep Hamilton has a unique background. I mean, a very, very unique background in terms of being an offensive coordinator in this league. A great offensive coordinator at Stanford. Mm-hmm. He was an OC with the Colts under Andrew Luck. And I think he did a great job tutoring Justin Herbert. So that's another name that I think is out there that could potentially be a fit here as an offensive coordinator. And then the last one, if you can't get Nathaniel Hackett and you're looking at what Green Bay did and you're envious of what Green Bay did, Luke Getsy is the passing game coordinator for the Green Bay Packers. So those are five guys that are up and coming or guys that are not OCs right now that you could promote to that level and give them an opportunity and a shot in this league. And so I'd be very curious if any of those guys were on their list, but those are some names that you look around the league and some successful offenses that I think could potentially provide a boost.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost here, talking about OCs that could be on the short list for Seattle. We talked about experienced play callers, Nathaniel Hackett, Alex Van Pelt, Arthur Smith, Shane Steichen, Nick Sirianni, Doug Peterson, with Doug Peterson being kind of the wild card long shot in there. But why not take a look? Jake just listed some up-and-coming innovators who are currently not OCs. Now, of this list, and I'll read that one more time, Mike LaFleur, Mike Daniel, the Mike and Mikes, Shane Waldron, Pep Hamilton, Luke Getsy, these guys all, with the exception of Pep Hamilton coming from NFC teams, three of these guys, Shane Waldron, Mike McDaniel, Mike LaFleur, coming from inside your own division. As far as who looks most intriguing here to me, Jake, I like the idea of Pep Hamilton, his experience as a quarterback coach. Mike LaFleur would make for an interesting matchup with Green Bay, younger brother of head coach Matt LaFleur.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it would.
And I think that could be a tempting option for a guy like Pete Carroll, who looks at what LA and the 49ers have been able to do with their run game and says, well, here's a guy who understands quarterbacks, understands how to diversify the pass game, but understands the importance of, in his opinion, setting up the run to give your quarterback some of those opportunities.
Yeah, and I think it would be great. But if you're, and I'm fully on board with that, but if you're really truly trying to find a run game again and be dynamic in your run game, Mike McDaniel, what he's done there with the 49ers and that running game has been outstanding. I've been so impressed with what they've done from the running game standpoint and how creative they have been. So he could definitely be one as well. The one guy that is so obvious, Stacey, for the Seahawks and for Pete Carroll in this background and is just a little too late is Steve Sarkisian.
I know. I've seen people texting in about it, and I can't respond to everyone to say he's not an option anymore.
Correct. He's not an option. He's not an option, and obviously he signed his deal and inked his deal with Texas. But if he had not, he would have been the clear and obvious choice for this job. With his background with Pete Carroll, how he knows Pete Carroll inside and out, and obviously what he was able to do at Alabama and kind of revitalize himself, that to me would have been the clear and obvious choice in this current circumstances. But I think that I gave you, and for everybody listening, that was a lot to dive into. I gave you 11 names, but those are 11 names that as I look around the league from an experience standpoint, experienced play callers, and up-and-coming innovators, I think that those are 11 guys that I think really should be on this list for the Seahawks, and I'll be curious if any of those names really get any run with the Seattle Seahawks.
Who's the one from each group, experienced OCs and then up-and-coming innovators, that you would be most curious to see, specifically with Russell Wilson? Because I think that that's what most fans are nervous about, either when they're listening now, when they're watching this all happen, is, well, what if we bring someone that is the 2018 version of what Schottenheimer was going to be, someone who comes in and just reestablishes the run? That's not as – it's important. I'm not saying that's not an important part of football. When you have a guy that is about to be a 10-year veteran in the NFL, and despite a really lackluster second half to the season, one of the most accomplished passers in the NFL, you want to feel like there's someone that's going to help him get to the next level.
Correct. And you need to. You can't go backwards, right?
Well, and people are worried about.
What I'm worried about for this offense, and why I said I was uncomfortable yesterday when this first came out about Brian Schottenheimer no longer being in this town, is because I'm uncomfortable with the idea and the fact that you go completely backwards as an offense and you regress to the point where it's deja vu all over again. It's an early exit in the playoffs. You're able to win a lot of games. But Russell Wilson in this offense and this talent is not being utilized to its fullest potential. At its best, Stacey, and we have seen it this year, at its best, this offense and this group that they currently have can be the best offense in this league. For 8 weeks, they were the number one offense in this league. Let's think about that for a second. Now, the key is, can they sustain that? And can they do it in a way that is balanced, that is sustainable, that is a offense that can be versatile, can be multiple, and can be malleable in the sense that it doesn't matter what you throw at them, doesn't matter what opponent they go against, they have a plan and a way to win. And this season, it was very clear that they were not able to do that, particularly in the second half of this season. And that's what the next guy who is going to be charged with this offense has to be able to accomplish. And that, to me, is an incredible task, but it's going to be on Pete Carroll to not go back to simply what is comfortable and what you know best, but to continue to strive and push and innovate in this offense, because it has that potential.
Now, there's a lot of drama coming out of Houston. We're going to get to that in the timeline, some new updates on the James Harden fiasco, and some continuing updates on trade rumors with Deshaun Watson. Before we get to any of that, it's time for Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Mac and Jack's African Amber Ale.
With Jake and Stacey.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it. First down, Jake. The firing of Brian Schottenheimer took a lot of us off guard yesterday, but do you think Russell Wilson was surprised by the decision to move on from Schottie?
Ultimately, no. Ultimately, I don't think Russell Wilson was surprised because Pete Carroll, John Schneider, and Russell Wilson are in communication. So, was he surprised initially that this was the road that they were going to go down? Probably. But I do think that he knew before this happened. I don't think he looked at his phone and said, oh my gosh, I can't believe that happened. If that was the case, I think there's some bigger problems on hand. But I do think that Russell Wilson will be a part of the conversation moving forward. I don't think he'll have final say by any means, but I do think that they will look for his input when it comes down to these names that they're collecting and when it comes down to their short list. So it's going to be very important to not necessarily have the final approval by your quarterback, but that your quarterback, your franchise QB, and the guy that you know has to play at an extremely high level in order for you to get to a Super Bowl, he's got to be on board. He's got to be on board, and he's got to feel good about the plan and the direction moving forward.
Second down. Stacy.
Curtis.
Hey.
Hey.
How's it going?
Oh, it's okay.
Come here often?
Yeah.
All right, cool. What change do you want to see in terms of personnel on the Seahawks 2021 offense?
Now, yesterday I talked about potential moves they might have to make with running back. This isn't necessarily in terms of personnel I want to see coming or going, but the use of personnel, the use of players that they have on offense. Just like anyone else watching this team this year, it was really fun to see the way that they were using DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, though that was slightly more inconsistent, at times not there. You had two receivers with 100-plus targets, one with 100 receptions, both with 1,000-yard seasons. That's great. However, I think that one thing this offense has typically done well, and Russell Wilson has typically done well, and has done well in some of their best games earlier this season, is spread some of that love around, spread the ball around. I was surprised to not see, frankly, the tight ends used as often this year. Jacob Hollister, Greg Olsen, Will Disley were both 5th, 6th, and 7th in terms of targets. After that, you get some rookies in there like Freddie Swain, DJ Dallas. That makes sense. But I would have liked to see Chris Carson incorporated just a bit more in the pass game, and he was injured, so maybe we would have seen that. And then tight ends incorporated just a bit more. And I hope that one of the ways that they try to diversify the offense or switch it up a bit next year is to incorporate some of those guys.
Third down. Jake, what will the first priority of Seattle's new offensive coordinator be when they're first hired?
Well, it's as obvious gets, is that's developing a rapport and a relationship with Russell Wilson and helping him understand the plan and the vision for this offense. And one of the other things, too, is sometimes for a quarterback at this level, for Russell Wilson, for Tom Brady, for Aaron Rodgers, is being able to hit the reset button and being able to get back to the basics. Get back to the basics of where your eyes are supposed to be. How does my offensive coordinator want me to see and read this play? And sometimes when you get back to the basics of those fundamental aspects, it can resharpen you. It can get you back on track. And so that's what my hope is with this offensive coordinator, whoever it's going to be, is that they will be clear in their vision, clear in the way that they want this quarterback to operate within their system, within their scheme, and that, I believe, will bring out the best in Russell Wilson on top of everything else that Russell does. And also, within this system, finding ways to help allow Russell Wilson to help you as an offensive coordinator to where you don't need to be perfect, right? We looked at Sean McVay, and Troy Aikman during the broadcast said, man, Sean McVay now has the pressure on him to be the perfect play caller. If you don't design the first guy to be open, probably not going to be a good thing for Jared Goff to be looking through his progressions and find the open receiver. So you don't need to come in here as a new offensive coordinator and be perfect. Allow your quarterback to help you at the line of scrimmage to get you in great positions. And if you can work that together as well as putting an offense that is up-tempo, that commands and dictates the tempo of games, I think that you're going to be in a really good position.
Fourth down. Jake, what was the biggest reason why Brian Schottenheimer is no longer the OC for the Seahawks?
Very, very clear in my mind. Adjustments. The inability to adjust in games, the inability to look at what defenses were doing in the second half of the season, and to be able to respond appropriately. And I think that's what drove Pete Carroll nuts, and that's why eventually they parted ways, and that's what manifested itself against the Rams, that you were not able to adjust in a manner that put this offense in the best position possible, put Russell Wilson in the best position possible, put your offensive line in the best position possible. And to me, as you watch that game, there were also plays that they had called previous, which is totally normal. You will see when you play a divisional opponent that there will be plays, similar plays that you call every single time you play them, because you know their tendencies and you know that these certain plays give them fits. But you come up with creative and different ways to get there, different formations, different shifts, different motions. And there were sometimes the same plays, the same formations, the same motions. And one of them was the interception that happened, the screen pass that happened in that game. Darius Williams knew exactly what was coming because he had seen it on film prior. Not just the play, but the same exact setup. And that part of it to me is something that you cannot do.
So that was the exact same play from their prior meeting with the Rams, or from a separate game shortly before?
From their prior meeting with the Rams.
So against the same team, they had the same personnel, same play?
Yes.
Is that, how common
same,
is that?
Same setup. It's normal to have the same play.
Right.
But you try and give a different look to it. You do it out of a different formation, or you do it with a different player, or you do it with a different motion. And there were a few times where I saw the same play, same setup from previous. And that to me is something that the Rams were totally prepared for. And that's not something that you love to see moving forward with this type of offense.
Definitely do not love to see that. It's one of the most surprising things I've ever seen a player say about his team during a press conference. That's coming up in the timeline.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacy,
brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It is The Timeline on Jake and Stacy, reading you guys the top stories you're going to see on your own timelines. If you haven't seen this one yet, it was making the rounds yesterday. So I told you guys one of the most surprising things I've seen a player say about his team during a press conference. It's more that I hadn't seen anything like it yet. Not that it was surprising from this player in this situation. This was James Harden, cut number 5, talking about the situation with the Rockets.
We're just not good enough. Obviously, chemistry, talent-wise, just everything. And it was clear, like I said, these last few games, you know, from the beginning of the game. They were just aggressive, veteran team, obviously, championship team, and you know, one of the best teams that we have in this league. I love this city. I literally have done everything that I can. I mean, this situation is crazy. You know, it's something that I don't think can be fixed. So, yeah, thanks.
That is as close as you can get to publicly demanding a trade. I mean, it is right there on the border. Everyone knows that he's unhappy with the Rockets. Now, this from ESPN breaking, let's see, just under an hour ago. The Houston Rockets are also planning to keep James Harden away from the team until they can complete a trade involving the unhappy star. That was from Ramona Shelbourne. Houston sports right now, guys. There's a chance both James Harden and Deshaun Watson are out here. For Harden, obviously, I would assume sooner, but both stars could be out by the end of the year.
Yeah, it would be two massive
JJ
stars.
JJ Watt,
yes.
And also George Springer from the Astros,
yep.
Too.
Yeah, that would be crazy. Let's go to cut number 6 here. Here's Rockets point guard John Wall responding to Harden with his own comments about players jumping ship.
When you have certain guys in the mix that don't want to buy in all as one, it's going to be hard to do anything special or do anything good as a basketball team. I've been on those teams. My 11 years been in the league. I've been on a team like that my first 5 years where it was all about me, not about the team. And that hurts. And it brings everybody down. So when we can get all on the same page, we can be something good here. And we can't dwell down on it because it's only been 9 games. Like, come on, man. You want to jump off the cliff off of 9 games? There's a lot of basketball still to be played.
Yeah, this isn't based off of 9 games. This is James Harden just doing whatever he has to do to get out of there. And I'm sorry, but I know we've had this conversation before. I don't care if James Harden can score you 30 or 40 points. I don't want him. If I'm any fan out there in the NBA right now, unless you're just focused on being entertained, if you want to be entertained, on a nightly basis, and you and as an organization, you want to be relevant in the conversation. You want to sell tickets, and that is what an owner wants. I don't want James Harden anywhere near my organization. An absolute cancer. And this is also to show when you give a player ultimate run, which is what the Houston Rockets have done. There is nothing more that the Houston Rockets could have done for James Harden personally and professionally that you're going to get burned, because eventually it's just not going to be enough.
You mentioned we brought this up. We did bring this topic up in Hype Train, which we do every Wednesday. We're going to have that coming up later in the show, where I read some kind of trend topic, a bit of hype, and we all have to decide whether or not we're boarding that hype train. The one that we read, I don't even know, 2-3 weeks ago, was when you are as good as James Harden, you can do exactly what he's doing, which is be kind of a headache. I got on that hype train because I was like, James Harden is phenomenal. And I think that I compared it at the time, if I remember correctly, to what was happening with Jamal Adams, where Jamal Adams was so clearly unhappy with the Jets. The difference is that Jamal Adams was still giving his all and just wanted to be with a functioning organization. With James Harden, he's still good. Like, it's still, he's still James Harden, but it's also clear that he's not putting in anywhere near the level of effort that he could be. He's showing up to games looking like he just got back from vacation. it's just...
Right. I mean, how can you demand and how can you take this guy seriously when you know he hasn't been putting all the work in? It's not like this guy has been tirelessly working.
But he can demand because he's so good.
Sure. Yeah, you can. But and they have. They've given and caved in to everything that James Harden wants. And it's run its course. If I'm the Houston Rockets, I'm looking to do anything I can to get this guy out. Obviously, you want something in return. But what organization is watching what's happening in Houston and saying, sign me up for that? I don't know.
I think an organization that just wants to get the talent that James Harden would bring them, knowing that James Harden would probably be acting differently with that new organization.
About 20 minutes ago, DeMarcus Cousins, who is also on the Rockets and is actually a close friend of John Wall, they played together in college, he was asked about James Harden's behavior. Here's what Cousins had to say.
Me personally, I don't feel betrayed at all. My interest is playing with John Wall, to be brutally honest. And with that being said, the disrespect started way before, you know, any interview. Just the approach to training camp, showing up the way he did, the antics off the court. I mean, the disrespect started way before. So this isn't something that, you know, all of a sudden happened, you know, last night. But with that being said, like I said, this is the nasty part of the business. So it is what it is.
Yeah, it is. And he knows. I mean, DeMarcus Cousins had his fair share of running into problems with the franchise and being disgruntled himself. But I think this takes it to a whole nother level. There's sometimes when you look at business is business, and players can respect that. Teammates can respect that. But when you disrespect the guys in the locker room, that's when it really, really deteriorates really, really fast. And I think it's been very, very clear and very evident by the words of DeMarcus Cousins and John Wall that James Harden couldn't be handling this any worse. So for me, again, we talked about, would you want James Harden on your team? I said, no way. If you want a chance and an aspiration of getting to an NBA championship game, Harden will never give you there. I stand by my words stronger than ever before.
Situation getting even worse with another Houston franchise. The Texans reportedly at odds with their star quarterback, Deshaun Watson, who many, many, many teams would be willing to trade some first-round picks for. Deshaun Watson reportedly wants out of Houston after ownership told him, yeah, you can definitely have a say in who we hire, and then hired someone without him getting a say. So I saw some text saying, well, why would Deshaun Watson think he'd have a say? If you're told you get to have one, I'm expecting one. Now, yesterday we told you Andre Johnson, former Texans great, said, if I'm Deshaun Watson, I stand my ground. The Texans organization is known for wasting players' careers. Since Jack Easterby has walked into the building, nothing good has happened in or for the organization. And for some reason, people can't seem to see what's going on. Pathetic. Well, yesterday after the show, so yesterday late afternoon, Arian Foster also chimed in. He retweeted Andre Johnson and said, I don't keep up with much in the league, so I don't know who Buddy is, but I know my brother. And for him to get this out of pocket means there's got to be some stuff going on, some editing happening there by me. Dre is the calmest cat on the planet. So once again, endorsing that there is some shady, not shady, some
clear dysfunction.
Some clear dysfunction at the top of the helm with
course.
The Texans.
Of course. I mean, Deshaun Watson, Stacey, as a guy, I've been able to be around Deshaun Watson, you know, kind of on and off the field a little bit. And I'm not going to sit here and act like I know Deshaun Watson personally or anything, but this is a guy that is extremely laid back. This guy is not a diva. I'll just put it that way. There are certain guys that are definitely divas. Deshaun Watson is not a diva. This is not an ego-driven situation. But when you see your franchise in clear dysfunction and as a franchise quarterback, the expectations are that you remain loyal to your franchise, if I'm him, I'm not signing up for this any longer than I have to. And if I'm him, I'm trying to get out as fast as I possibly can, because I think there's some other organizations right now that are quarterback needy that could be a great spot for him. The 49ers would be one. The Miami Dolphins is another one that gets thrown out there. The Vegas Raiders are another team that I think would be an interesting fit for Deshaun Watson. But overall, if you know this is going to be an absolute train wreck as a quarterback and you have any opportunity to get yourself out of town, why would you not take advantage of that opportunity?
We have some news with the Bears that I didn't have a chance to get to, but I'm actually going to combine it with this Deshaun Watson news for the Hype Train segment. I think you guys are going to like this one. So stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. That's coming up later. First, though, Brock Heward joined Wyman and Bob the other day and said that the Seahawks could do something innovative with offense and take some inspiration from a team currently in the playoffs. We'll tell you who it is next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Brock Heward said something interesting the other day about maybe some inspiration Seattle should take from another team, a team currently in the postseason. If I had you guess which team that is, I'm guessing some of the early responses people are thinking now would be the Rams or Green Bay, maybe the Saints. You are right in one of those. Here's what Brock said, cut number four on Wyman and Bob.
You know, you need a man, you need an innovator. You need somebody 10 years in, kind of like Aaron Rodgers had to have in Green Bay, right? I mean, after they got rid of McCarthy and make that move, like, I need somebody that's going to come in here and challenge Aaron Rodgers. I'm going to need somebody that's going to just innovate and create. I need somebody to somehow, you know, continue to help Russell and this offense take another step and, you know, not just protect the football, but continue to do what they did, you know, and have done in stretches where they're the best offense in the league.
Now, Jake, everyone here talks about Kansas City in part because Russell Wilson often compared or debated about in a comparison with Patrick Mahomes. And that makes sense. Patrick Mahomes, star of the league. Everyone talks about him all the time. That passing offense is fun to watch. Don't get me wrong. I love a good defense, love a good run game, love watching Derrick Henry, love watching the Rams. But guess what? Patrick Mahomes is awesome. He is really fun to watch. But there is another team in there that has been so incredibly successful this year that is running an offense that Pete Carroll might be more interested in. It doesn't have to be the high-flying kind of experimental passing game that Kansas City has. It could be like Green Bay. What do you think Brock is looking at when he looks at what Green Bay's coordinators have been able to do with Aaron Rodgers?
Right. What they've been able to do under Matt LaFleur and what Kyle Shanahan and what Sean McVay have done is that everybody recognizes what they did from a passing standpoint, particularly Sean McVay, but everything is centered and grounded through the run game, right? And so when they can get their ground game going and they can have that element, it makes their offense very difficult to defend because they can be so innovative in the way that they dress up their formations, the way that they attack people, downfield, intermediate, and get people on the edges. And one of the things that Green Bay has done, and had a texter here, 206 on the Vizzy Hart Seltzer text line, who originally said Jake, you're getting on my nerves. And through the conversation that we ended up having going back and forth, they're saying that the reason why they were getting frustrated with me is because they're saying that they felt that I was only saying that the only way as an offense that you can be successful and for this group to maximize Russell Wilson's talents is to just be a pass heavy offense. No, that's not what I'm saying, and nor was that ever when the whole let Russ cook conversation happened. That wasn't what it was about. It was about being aggressive early, being aggressive on first and second down, allowing your quarterback at this stage in his career mentally to put you in the best positions possible. And I still believe that that is a fundamental aspect of this offense, that it needs to continue to be that way. However, you need to be grounded through the run game. You still need to have that element. And that's what all those offenses have. But to Brock Huard's point is you have to be innovative in the way that you do it and the way that you connect the run and the pass game together, right? And so to me, what they're able to do with Aaron Rodgers, let's look at their stat line, right? They're the number one scoring offense, but I'll give you a perfect example. Devontae Adams is clearly their best offensive weapon.
Yes.
Right? Aaron Jones, their running back, is the second best weapon, I would say,
yep.
And most diverse. But Devontae Adams is by far your most diverse, biggest weapon, and everybody knows it. And yet, Devontae Adams has 150 targets, he has 115 receptions, he has 18 touchdowns, and finished the season with almost 1,400 yards on offense. How did they do that? Well, they were innovative and creative in the way that they got him the ball in a variety of different ways and attacked it downfield and were able to utilize the strengths of Marquez Valdez-Scantling, a guy who can absolutely fly down the field. So Alan Lazard, these guys aren't world beaters. They don't have, from a receiver standpoint, huge names or are better than DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, but they did not allow defenses to dictate to them how they were going to play or that they could be stopped. They were creative in every aspect and used their running game, grounded in the run game, but still were dynamic in the passing game with their schemes and what they did. And that's the difference here, that what occurred in 2020. Eventually, you were found out. Eventually, people caught up to you, and you were never able to get yourself back one step ahead of the competition.
Is there one thing in particular you can think of with how Green Bay used Devontae Adams where you thought they could have done that, or I'd like to see Seattle do this with DK Metcalf? It could be, oh, maybe he gets yards after catch. I don't actually know his yards after catch stats. I'm sure they're fine, but I would doubt that that's the number one thing. Maybe I'm wrong, but I would think that's more of like a Cooper Kupp situation. With Devontae Adams, was it getting him in the right matchups? Is it using him?
Absolutely.
I mean, what specifically did you think that's how you could use
Devontae Adams was used very much throughout the season, like you saw Steve Sarkisian use Devontae Smith.
Okay.
Right? So they put him, not only did they put him outside, inside, in the slot, attacking downfield, underneath stuff, they found simple ways in sprint outs for Aaron Rodgers to throw quick outs to Devontae Adams. They did a variety of different things. Devontae Adams, one of his strengths is his ability to run after catch. So what'd they do? They utilized bubble screens and smoke screens and easy completions to get him the football. So I believe that when you look at this next offensive coordinator, you've got the talent. When you come here to Seattle, you've got the talent to get to a Super Bowl. You've got guys. So now can you be creative and innovative enough to stay one step ahead of a defense? Stay one step ahead of the league for the entire year. And that's what I'm hoping that the Seahawks can do. And one of the other things as well is that with the Green Bay Packers, Matt LaFleur was at the center of all of it, correct?
Mm-hmm.
But there was also a group that he brought in that this is not just on one guy. And I want to make sure that it's very clear about this. This is about having a clear vision from the top down in leadership, and that you have an offensive coordinator who is able to be creative and dial things up. But at the same time, right, at the same time, you have to have a collective group of a staff be able to stay one step ahead. And I think that's what all of these guys have done. Matt LaFleur, Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, They have surrounded themselves with innovators, with thinkers, with guys that are going to push the envelope, and guys that they can trust.
Looking at that yards after catch stat, by the way, which I thought was a good one to point to, shout out to Davante Adams, actually fourth. Fourth overall in yards after catch, after completion. Cooper Kupp right behind him at fifth. But 561 yards that he had from his total this year came because of favorable matchups, because he broke tackles, because he outmaneuvered, outplayed defensive backs and linebackers to find more space, found because they found him in space in the first part. I mean, that's great matchups is what helps you get that, too, in addition to great play by your receiver.
Right. Absolutely. And so if there's one thing, Stacey, that I can look for with this group moving forward, and my wish list for what is going on, it's not just the coordinator. It is the clear vision, the clear plan to maximize the talent that you have and not just be solely focused on a philosophy, but to stay grounded in a running game, but utilize the talents and the strengths that you have, which is one of the best quarterbacks in the league in Russell Wilson, and one of two of the more dynamic weapons that you have in the league of DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. And whatever else they have and whatever else they're able to put together, I think is going to be the cherry on top. But that's ultimately, to me, you have everything you need to be successful and everything that you need to get to a Super Bowl. But you've got to stay innovative. You've got to stay one step ahead. They were not able to do that this year.
All right, it is Wednesday. That means it's time for the hype train. We'll get started with where Juju Smith-Schuster is going to end up. Also, which Super Bowl contender still in the playoffs deserves to win the game most. That's next.